96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. I'm Catherine Chisnell Mitchell, happy to be here at the courtesy of your regular host, Mr. C.A. Nuri, my friend and mentor who always allows these kinds of conversations to interrupt your regular routine. Our telephone numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or 35720. You can text us, please text us, 422-GR96. We would love to hear from you throughout what's going to be a fantastic show today, because I am in the studio with a VVIP, one of my favorite people in the universe. Today we look towards Teachers Appreciation Week, where we salute their courage and survival over the course of the last year. While there are few experiences we can hold in common as a people, as we are so often divided by the stratifications of society, means, and culture, we have, every one of us, been a student in some manner at some point in this life. The teachers we meet and spend thousands of hours and hours of our formative years with, perhaps more than any other adult figures outside of our parental figures, are tasked with the grave, tremendous, mightily important quest of elevating the mind and energizing the character of youth. Their lessons are keenly felt, journeying forth with us and immortalized in their potentially life-changing impacts. So many of us, when I asked, and I asked lots of people this week leading up to this, do have that teacher they remember. Sometimes they remember them in hurt and disappointment, but so often in wonderful and meaningful ways. Albert Einstein said that it is the supreme art of a teacher to awaken joy and creative expression and knowledge. No small task in reality, where many schools are perpetually underfunded, often strapped for resources, and act as the first breakwater in the tidal waves of social, physical, and health crises that have slammed our shores again and again in recent years. Whilst the Bahamas commissions no formal army, our true teachers are the brave soldiers at the forefront of our battlefields today. Their art of war is inspiring curiosity and resilience, fighting for our futures, our opportunities, and safety, and arming us with the knowledge and insight needed for survival in a rapidly changing world, shielding us from the very real physical and social threats that have put lives and futures at risk. A glance to our neighbors in the north, and it's understandable with reports of rampant school shootings, suicides, and a myriad of issues resulting in a climate of social unrest, that it can feel for parents as out there as they pack their school lunchboxes that they're truly sending lambs to the slaughter. And yet our true soldiers teach on, enduring the slings and arrows of unprecedented challenges. Real hurricanes, most recently Matthew and Dorian, that literally washed schools out from under us, and incidentally made me a grade one teacher in Adelaide Village for a month, and I realized how hard teaching was. And had others open their doors in salvific welcome and refuge to our most vulnerable. The COVID pandemic and lockdown thrust us into a whole new world of virtual learning, demanding we soar into online schooling whilst we were still earning our flight feathers. Soldiering on, dealing with the social impact of children both overly sheltered by lockdown life when social skills are meant to be honed, and hyper-exposed to the world through the cyberverse at their fingers. The TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, AI era boomeranging around us with fresh-faced opportunities and adversities. Teachers practice in protecting and training our children to thrive and survive where footing is uncertain, marched on firmly, all whilst dealing with their own families, griefs, and graces, placed under the microscope of the Zoom classroom, allowing unprecedented access and real-time critique of their work, all while bearing the banner of this mythical teacher, the unicorn that works for limited pay, for unlimited hours, emotionally and professionally wrung out daily, and yet craves nothing more than lasting change and positive impact, all while being utterly human. It's hard to imagine that any such teacher exists, and yet so many of us can name one and claim one. I am gifted today with the honor of having a mighty warrior, a purple heart of courage and caring in our studio today. Teacher, mentor, educator of excellence, my and so many others' other mother, the magnificent, much beloved Sylvia Benneby. Mrs. Sylvia Benneby is the vice principal of primary years at Queens College, my alma mater. We are all QC Comets up in here today, so Sackers be warned. She has, as I gasp, served for 43 years in education. I didn't know I was that old when I read that. And she now looks towards well-deserved years of retirement, though her former students, many of whom are parents of our current students, weep and lament and are in ongoing denial that she'll soon leave our ship short of a sturdy anchor. A QC graduate herself, after university in Canada, she returned with a desire for impact, to nurture and to inspire, and felt pulled back to her alma mater. This call, and I've heard the term, the call, mentioned in several conversations with teachers this week talking about the subject. This call of teaching seems to be the only explanation for why current teachers persevere. She started in grade one, but I was blessed with her in grade two. And she is said to have hit her stride as a second grade teacher. An advocate for innovation and unafraid to embrace change, she is hailed amongst her many accomplishments for fearlessly introducing her children to the computer age, many of whom have written to me that they remember all the fundraising for those first, like, dinosaur computers in the classrooms. And in what I think almost to be more essential, she was a champion for mental health in a time when that was a fairly new topic being discussed in schools. I remember many joyful I'm Special programs in her classroom, and I still live singing I Am a Promise, I Have a Possibility to my daughter often, that left us feeling with security and belongingness. That was the hallmark of her teaching environment to me. We felt seen, safe, and cared for in her class. What we learned might be forgotten. The education of that feeling is what remains. Mrs. Benneby, Mrs. Digg, as I met her at, and we felt almost jealous when she got married and took a new name and we had to share her with some husband, leaves behind a legacy of excellence defined by dedication and tremendous heart with generations of families that remember her with warmth and gratitude. Welcome, Mrs. Sylvia Benneby. I'm so honored to have you today. As you ask so many of your pupils daily, how are you doing today?
Well, wow, and thank you for that warm welcome, Catherine. It is a delight. I am doing great. I will admit I was a little bit nervous now that she was on the other foot. The student becomes the teacher, so this is great to be interviewed by a former second grade student that I actually taught how to read. Wow, how the tides have turned. But I'm happy to be here, Catherine.
And I was one of those children that faced literacy challenges in my memory. So thank you for making reading a delight to me nowadays. And thank you for being the grandparent at Queens College to my children that now attend that school. I think that legacy is something special. And I do hope you forgive me for not mentioning there were cameras on in the room. You, as ever, look timeless to me. So I know we stand here at the mountaintop of your career, but for a moment, I want you to take us back to the start of the journey and tell us, little Sylvia Digges, when you were a little girl with your school bag packed and your uniform on, where were you heading to school and what kind of a student were you?
Wow. Okay. I joined Queens College in grade four in the primary school, but prior to that, I attended Aubrey Sale on Nassau Street, where I had a phenomenal teachers, mm-hmm. but one that I remember clearly who's passed now is Frida Carey. And she was just Thompson, married a Thompson. And she put the spark in me that I wanted to be like her because she had that motherly instinct. She had that caring instinct. She had that when you did something wrong, she pulled you and then she said, now you know your parents don't expect that from you, and I do not expect that from you. And that was all she had to say to me, to turn around, to do the right thing. So I applaud my teachers from my early years. And then I joined Queen's College in grade four. My father had this thing that all of his children, we were Methodists at the time, and all of the children would go to Queen's College because it's a church school. Well, I was the seventh out of eight. So every year, a new Digis joined Queen's College. So I had to wait my turn. So some of us started in high school, but I was privileged to start at primary school. And that was the QC life for me from then.
The true legacy ladder. Well, you know, I, coming from the Chisholm Maylist contingent, know that feeling that many have gone before. My grandfather actually went to QC. My mother taught that many have gone before and many will follow, including my children who were dropped off there early this morning. That makes me smile because in my notes, I wrote that you as a teacher always had in terms of endearment, whether or not you were it being commended or being censured. And that I remember you saying, okay, baby, okay, sweetie. And looking at you, when I was about Grace's age, my daughter's age, and thinking, I want to be like that when I grow up. I want to have that kindness despite it all when it comes to dealing with children. So thank you so much for carrying those lessons you learned. And that was my next teacher, Diff. And my next question, if you had any teachers that stayed with you throughout the years, when you reference back, if there's anyone in particular that stands out for you.
At Queen's College, when I went into high school, I guess because of my love for cooking, I had a home ec teacher from England. And when I did my GCEs, I got an A in home ec. So I guess she became my favorite person because my powers in the kitchen came from her, my love for cooking. So I think my home ec teacher was one that really believed in me. And then I had Reverend Giles Sweeting, who was my RE teacher, and Phil Cash, both of them who are deceased, but both of them believed in me. And when I returned to QC, Reverend Sweeting hired me for my first and only teaching post.
And no one could sing Land of Our Birth.
Exactly.
Like there was the blasting out. But again, there was a standard and a legacy set there from the early years. I think I'm going to badly quote Aristotle here when it says, it's pointless to educate the mind unless you also school the heart. And so again, those schoolings of the heart, you remember the approvals of your teachers or the disapprovals. Mm-hmm. I remember Mr. Alexander Roberts, and I still die. Because I was a goody two, I was not in trouble in school. I was a goody two shoes, you could say that. But I remember once he said to me, I was in high school, and he just came to me and he said, oh, Lady Chisholm, I see we're into minis, meaning my skirt was not like right above my ankles. And I mean, I was wearing nun skirts for the rest of the year. I couldn't bear even the implication of his disapproval. That was my respect I had for him at that time. Oh, my goodness, the memories we have. And children do remember keenly. I remember keenly when I got into trouble, and I remember keenly when I did well. And so I think that you, in the respect you show your students, have understood that. Now, when did you first feel the call to teach? This is something that's come up again and again as I talk to people, that it's a calling. It can't be a career because they don't pay you well enough for it. So can you tell us a little bit about this calling?
It's a calling and a ministry. Mm-hmm. And I've always worked with children, from the Ministry of Youth summer programs, from church summer camps. I have always gravitated towards children. I taught Sunday school for many years, and I'm still teaching Sunday school up to today. So I've always had that connection or bond that this is my purpose, this is why God put me here. I can make a significant difference in the life of, if it's only one child, I can do that. So there was a while when I wanted to dabble in child psychology because I felt like children, when they are hurting and they need help, then I realized, but you could have a greater impact if you teach. And then you could still be a psychologist because teachers are psychologists. Well,
whether or not they have the certificate, they all are.
Yeah, because I did my AA, associate degree, I did up to that in child psychology. And then I just switched up when I did that at UB, which is not a college of the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And then when I went into Canada, I'm like, no, let me go and do education. And that's what I did. I actually, as I was in Canada, on teaching practice finished in March, my cooperating teacher got sick, and the school just said, we'll keep you. I didn't get paid, but I taught for the rest of the year. I closed, and it was a grade two class. Uh-huh. So I did
your
that.
Sweet spot.
Yes.
And you knew you needed to return, and in particular return to your alma mater, but you knew you needed to return back to the Bahamas.
Absolutely.
And have you felt, from that brief experience in teaching in Canada to returning to the Bahamas, is there a difference in Bahamian students? I know that we had a lot of foreign teachers over the years saying Bahamian students are special. I like to believe that as a Bahamian student. Do you think we are a different breed of student?
I think children mm-hmm. are special, all children.
That's the correct answer.
Mind you, Canada, the kids in Canada at that time were amazing, and I think that the children in the Bahamas are amazing, and I just think that Queen's College have the best of the best.
Well,
of children.
I feel like we are totally biased in here, so feel free to call and represent any school you wish. We encourage callers on this show, even if we disagree with you and know that you're wrong. But one of the things that stuck out to me is that you mentioned in one of your interviews, and I guess as a child I wouldn't have noted it, but as an adult I realize what you went through. You mentioned being one of the first few teachers of color when it was common practice to recruit foreign teachers. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
When I was a student, my first teacher of color must have been in grade 8. Mm-hmm. And I made a conscientious decision that, listen, I could go off, get my degree, come back, and work at Queen's College to begin to put a dent in the color code at Queen's College. Now, mind you, by the time I graduated, we had more persons of color, but they weren't Bahamian. They were still coming from
a lot of the Caribbean countries we recruited from, and we got excellent teachers.
Yes. Yeah. But QC became a melting pot and a diversity, and that was great, and it served its purpose. And then it came a time where one of the things that I felt as a student was that I did not learn very much about my country, my Bahamas, because we were doing a English-based curriculum, and I wanted to know more about where I'm from, my history, my heritage, and I wanted to be a part of impacting that on students. So QC was the place for me to be. And then I looked at it and I said, well, because even when you looked at administration, there was very long time before someone of color was there. And I made the decision, and then I did what was necessary to work my way up the ladder to become where I am today.
And we're so grateful for that. And I will say, again, as a child, you see things differently. When I was a child, I thought as a child, I understood as a child. But I remember I see you so keenly as a second grader. And I thank you now for the embrace you had of me, because in my times in QC, I was one of maybe a couple of the little white children in a class. And I never felt anything, and I'll say the word again, anything but belongingness mm-hmm. in your presence, of complete embrace. And I think that's across the student body, that anyone who was held and scooped up by you, and many children have been so over the eras, have felt that feeling of complete embrace. So I appreciate you for not letting me know that there was issues to be had at any point. Thank you. In advertising branding, I think so many people have said it. You don't buy what a product is or what it does, but you buy how it makes you feel. So many people I've talked to have said they don't remember exactly what they learned in an impactful class, the classes that carried residual influence, but remember how they felt or who they were in that space or who they became during that time with that teacher. Some felt elevated and inspired, and you've experienced great successes with some of your students, but some students fall through the gaps of the educational system and they struggle and they feel disappointed or humiliated. I guess I want to ask, how do we make inspiration intentional, or maybe what could we do better?
I honestly feel that, and this came to me through mentorship, through seeking out coaching, we as educators have to make a definitive decision to decide that every student, we talk about educating the whole child, but we have to decide that every student in front of us every year is going to experience 100% success. Now, I know my educators are going to shoot me for saying that because it's not easy. Yeah. And teaching is not easy. But those bodies in front of you have one shot with you for that 1 year. And if we stand and believe that every student in front of us can experience 100% success. Now, 100% success is not what the school defines. It's what that child and that parent defines as success for that at that point in time. I've been on a mission and a track for Queen's College that every student at the end of every grade level will be reading on or above their age and the grade level, and on or above their math skills must be on or above the grade level. The reason for that is those two foundational skills, if they have that impact, there is nothing that they cannot learn. You alluded to technology, and outside of that, if you could read and you could computate and you could understand and apply mathematics, anything else you could learn, you could ask Siri. But we have to make sure that our students can read, think critically, and analyze.
We actually have a caller. This is exciting. Please, just one moment. Good morning. This is Guardian Radio.
Congratulations, Mr. Kinnerice, along with you and your guests.
Mrs. Benneby.
Oh, Mrs. Benneby. Yes. How are you, Mrs. Benneby?
I am very well. Thank you for asking.
Oh, thank you. We need Justice Lorna Bahamas here. But the lady asked you a question. The question got away from me. But the thing is, the answer for that question I would put is that teach children to have a focus and teach them that while they are young, you know, and continue instilling it in them so they could, you know, so they could move ahead in a positive manner. I want to ask you another question, if I may, if you can help me. Around about 63, right? R.M. Sawyer was teaching at Sutton Junior. Some teachers were there.
Yes.
Ladies, can you remember their name? I remember one name. It's Ferguson. Can you remember the other name? A lady used to teach in grade 3.
I don't remember, but if anyone listening remembers, maybe they can call in and assist with that.
Okay, thank you for your time, and you're doing a beautiful job.
Thank you so much for listening, and we appreciate your call. And so, yes, the striving, as he advocates remaining focused. Now, again, we are both mothers in the studio as well. And this isn't a question I had in the lineup at this point, but you said advocating for 100% success of all children, but that does look different across the board. Sometimes I think what we have with children with diverse learning skill sets that hit their stride at different times, it can feel daunting from a parental point of view. It feels like there's a lot of testing, a lot of quantifying of their talents, and a lot of pressure. Do you have any takes on that as an administrator? I asked that poorly. Let me finish what I was going to say going forward, because I think you might be able to better answer this. Just one moment, because I have the question I want to ask for you. And it says that without aging who you are, ageless in my and many other students' eyes, you've been in this profession for more than 4 decades. What are some of the major shifts that you've seen?
Okay. Before we go to that, I want to just answer the caller on the question of focus, because focus involves, but to get 100% success, the student has to be focused. So that was a given, and I guess. But I want to let him know that I support and I agree with that. And then I go back to your question about the changes over the years. Technology is a given. That is a change, and we all had to pivot. Like you said, you remember when...
Brace.
It was the Mac computers in grade 2. We had to actually put bars on the classroom windows to secure. I had 6 computers in my classroom, and they were the first set of computers on Queen's College campus.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. I do remember that now.
Yes, a parent donated all 6 of them because it was felt at that time that it was important. And then it was computer-assisted learning. And then now it's computer will take over the classroom if we allow it. And it can, because we've been through virtual learning. So we know that we can do 100% online learning. The lesson learned is that whatever comes up as educators, we have to pivot, we have to adjust, we have to continuously learn, we have to be a part of that change, because whether we like it or not, our students are moving forward. My son knows more about technology than I will ever know. What he doesn't know is how best can we use this to get where we need to go. And so you need to have the teacher and you need to guide the student on how to use the technology. And then the other side that I have seen changes is the social and emotional development that children go through at such an early age. Catherine, it grieves me when I have to go to a funeral mm-hmm. of a child's parent. Mm-hmm. My first death I was 15 years old when I went to my first funeral. Mm-hmm. Kids today are going to funerals at 5 mm-hmm. or younger.
And QC has suffered a lot of heartbreaking yes. losses over the yes. last few years. It's been hit after hit, including, of course, our head boy most recently.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. so the social and emotional development, and that even causes us as educators to say sometimes we have to allow children to grieve. The curriculum cannot go on as usual. Mm-hmm. We have to make space and allowances to let children go through the process. We can't say it's a deadline, it's a deadline, it's a deadline. So for me, I think, and because I'm a heart teacher yeah. from the heart, I have to sometimes say to teachers, let it go for now. Mm-hmm. When they're ready, they will catch up. And if they don't catch up this year, so be it.
And as we said, QC lost their head boy this year, and we've had other losses of teachers, of parents, and I will say that the honoring of that, the ceremonies that are surrounded, the support and the desire to understand the process around it does add to the family feel, which I think is essential to a school environment. And I will say personally, I know my young cousin lost his father when he was a primary student, and there was a lot of care and support for him. And my sister, my nieces went through familial trauma, and that Mrs. Benaby physically picked up Maria. Hi, Maria, if you're listening, and would hold her and help my sister through that time of her school. I'm not going to cry on radio. You're going to cause me to lose my job today. But you physically were there. And so I appreciate the understanding of that because it's a lot. Mm-hmm. The pressure is a lot. And I don't want to get off track, but I've had people say to me, you know, that these children are 3 years behind in a lot of ways. They're socially 3 years younger in a lot of their milestones and skill sets because they went through the COVID pandemic. I think it was March 20th, 2020, that we all got that, oh my gosh, this is a real thing. We're not going to school for however long. And that was a shock to the system. But socially, you're trying to keep kids on track academically, get them launched into their lifestyles, but they are still having to, you know, catch up from where they were. Is that something you see in the school system?
You know what's amazing? And it's difficult to get parents and teachers to understand. We went through COVID-19, so that's 2019. And when we return to school and we say to teachers, slow down, peel back. But parents put the pressure on. Mm-hmm. Teachers felt that administrators were putting the pressure on. And they felt that they must pick up the curriculum and go fast forward ahead.
We actually have another caller. So just one moment, let's go over to that. Good morning, Guardian Radio.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning to your guest.
Thank you.
She's a veteran teacher. It's Benaby, right?
Yes, she is. She's a legend.
It's Benaby. It's the first time I ask this question. You're the first one to I ask, too. And the AI. You know what's AI?
Yes, sir.
It's AI, when I can hang up, it's AI would help, would enhance. Are the teachers ready for it? I'm not talking about the young teachers because they're not in university. I'm talking about the teachers now. The AI technology, how would you utilize it? And it's being utilized in Green Garden. Or how would you look at it, the negative or the positive? And my dear, you have a good show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
I actually am really happy we got that call because as we wrap up, we're going to be talking about the subjects that have changed in school and what we'd like to see added into a curriculum. So, sir, with a great appreciation, because I have AI written down here, we're going to just get to that in a few minutes. But before, I have to say, and again, I keep personalizing this because this is deeply personal to both of us, but you are a parent, you are a mother. How old were you when you became a mother, Mrs. Benaby? To me, you're always 24.
Why you want to do that?
I mean, because I feel like you were slightly... I became a mother when I was 30...
Yeah,
43? How old was I? 35 when I was I was an older mother.
And I was older than you.
Yes. And you're all right, so we don't have to get into the number game despite the fact I'm not a math brain anyway. Mm-hmm. But what I'd like to say is, okay, hi Dominic, you have a handsome, talented young man who's an aspiring photographer. He is charming and he is going to go into the world in his own way. However, how did being a parent inform your views of education? And what would you advise us on the journey? We know being a teacher is not the same as being a mom. Tell us about it.
Wow. If Dominic is listening, I owe Dominic some apologies.
He's very handsome.
Yeah, Dominic felt that QC came first. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it did, to his demise. It did. So, I mean, to his disadvantage, QC came first because he was there and it was just, he had to wait long and then it's always, we got to go. But Dominic benefited from the Queen's College experience. He was in a safe environment and for me, that was good. As a parent, school brought, Dominic's disadvantage is he has two parents that are educators.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as a plus, and a minus. Mm-hmm. And then Dominic came up in an era and a decade where sometimes his parents wanted him to do things the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. And you know Dominic. Dominic has a mind of his own. Dominic is strong-willed.
He is an individual.
Yeah. He is very opinionated. And so Dominic still is fighting mm-hmm. against the grain, but he is balancing.
Growing against the grain.
But I watch him in amazement now. He is a fantastic human being and young mm-hmm. man. When he comes into his own fully, mm-hmm. watch out, world, because he is going to do some serious things in this world that will make a great, great, great impact. And I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And in all the educational quotes, there's so many along the lines of all children are packages, but you open them at different mm-hmm. times. And talking, like, I remember my brother, Alistair. I hope someone you know is listening. I remember in grade 7, I think it is, when my mother threatened that she was going to go and sit in the back of his class because he wasn't turning in homework. And he's, you know, doing fairly well as a top lawyer nowadays.
Very well.
I'm bragging on my little brother because, I mean, I was at one point, I'm like, is he a dud? Are we going to have to send him back to sender? I mean, he came into his own. And I think sometimes if we're waiting for these academic milestones or for children to figure out what their focus is at a time before they're ready for it, it could be detrimental to them and to the teachers that are forced to name them for such roles that early on. I know that the long division almost drove Jesus out of my household these last few weeks. There were tears. There was, you know, the moment, and I had to tap my husband on the shoulder and be like, "You're up, batter up, go and help handle long division." And I remember talking about parents and teachers. My mother is a teacher. In fact, her experiences, Maria Chisnell, her experiences of being stopped in the food store and gas stations with a, "Hey, Mrs. Chisnell, do you remember me?" Mm-hmm. informed my belief that teachers possess superhero status because I felt like she was known across the world and usually greeted with quite a lot of warmth. Most recently, she said a student came to her and said, "Do you remember reading with me?" And now he does voiceovers for books. And so it's one of those moments that you're like, ah, that mattered. That me being there matters. But I remember in my second grade report card that you wrote that I was a peaceful and angelic child. And my mother said she was going to the school to tell them that you had the wrong child. But thank you for seeing that in me. And I think that in your class, I was. But parenting isn't easy. What advice? So I have a grade 3 about to go into GLAD, and you think that he had to write, you know, to rule the world. I would like your advice on that, but we have another caller. Oh, you're engaging a lot of conversation today. Good morning. This is Guardian Radio. Good morning, this is Guardian Radio. Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio.
Hello, I was wondering, how do I call the live radio?
This is a live radio, you're on the air. Are you ready to be?
Oh, I am. Hello, Thea.
Hi, this is my niece, Maria. She was spoken about earlier on the news. She's calling in from SCAD, where I have to say she went from being someone, as I'm going to do this to you, Maria. In primary school, you had severe literacy challenges, and she has just been listed on the dean's list of SCAD. Amen. But she's a child I'm sorry, Maria, I love you very much. The child I talked about being scooped up by Mrs. Benaby physically when she was in her early
exactly.
years. So here she is. Go ahead,
yes.
Maria.
Yes, hello, Mummy Benedict. It's so good to hear you on radio. Mm-hmm. And I am calling for just the reason that Dianini just mentioned. I wanted to thank you for all those days. I know we are agreeing not to cry.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're on camera. We don't look bad.
My childhood would have been so different without you in it and all the other teachers at Queen's College who affected my childhood. I know that it matters a lot to the family to take care of a child who's going through a difficult time in their life. But people sometimes forget that a child's life, well, most of our days, 5 days a week, 7 hours a day, are spent at school with our teachers. And so that relationship is very important and integral, and I want to thank you for making it so such a wonderful thing despite the hard days. So thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
You are so welcome. And I just want to put in a plug for your mom, who I think in my when I started teaching, she was one of the first students that I had, either in my first or second year. And part of my legacy and joy of teaching is Calliope and her two girls. I need to write a book like Calliope, because my heart warms when I look at, I was a part of the struggle. Like, Calliope was a wonderful student. Life was very easy for her, nobody would think, but then she became an adult, came a mom, went through some challenges, but she is an overcomer, and her children are even greater overcomers than her. And I want to publicly say that part of my story and part of my journey, I was blessed to be part of who both of you and your sister have become today. I watched you and I marveled. And it gives me an opportunity to say to parents, there is hope for every child. Just let the natural process go through. There was always God. You had a village. And you have an amazing and awesome mother and aunts and uncles. But Diana and Maria, I want you to know that it goes both ways. I am as proud of you as you are of having been a part of my life. So thank you for that.
Aw, we should have brought tissues in the studio today. Bye, Maria. Thank you. We love you.
Bye. Good luck, y'all.
Maria's also been on Guardian Radio. Thank you to C.A. Nuri for being our mentor and teacher. And I'm still learning, as my teacher told me, to be a lifelong learner. So at times of feeling nervous on the radio, I look to him and thank him for this opportunity. Teachers are shockingly human. Teaching virtual schools with babies on their laps, overwhelmed, as we said, under-resourced, much expected of them, and now more than ever exposed to scrutiny with the Zoom lenses, WhatsApp groups, and super connectivity. I want to, after this call, we've got another call in, I want you to tell me what lesson you would impart to a young professional coming into the teaching profession. What's the biggest lesson you learned while you were teaching? But we have another caller. Everyone wants to talk to you, Mrs. Benaby. Good morning. This is Guardian Radio. Good morning. This is Guardian Radio. All right. I think we've lost somebody. In the meantime, Mrs. Benaby is a teacher's teacher. This is a text we have in. A true nation builder. My school mother, thank you for all the love and support for so many young people over the decades. Good morning. This is Guardian Radio. Good morning, Guardian Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're calling from Queens College.
Yay.
Yes. Hello.
At Queens College,
we're so... just want to say thank you to Ms. Benaby for her leadership and for being such an instrumental and motivational leader in our school community. Her dedication has definitely left a mark on all of us here at Queens College, and we love her so dearly.
Yes, we do. We love you, Ms. Benaby.
That have to be my grade 6 teachers. thank you for tuning in. They only could tune in before the parents say, but where are the students? Their students are in the seminar today, so let me just put that out there that they do have a little bit of time to be able to tune in. So, but grade 6, thank you for being the amazing, awesome, wonderful, hardworking, dedicated, my life lifters, making my job easier. Thank you, grade 6, and all the teachers on Village Road.
Thank you. Goodbye.
We appreciate you all, teachers. Thank you for, and those are the glad teachers. Oh, going into grade 6, glad. I shiver. So as we said, teachers are shockingly human. What lesson would you impart that you learned whilst being a teacher that you'd like to gift to a younger teacher today?
I didn't learn this. I'm not perfect. Let me put that out there. I haven't been, everything hasn't always been perfect, or I didn't always do what was right all the time. But I've learned some lessons and I've adjusted. But what I would say to up-and-coming teachers is be curious, continuously learn, but most importantly, listen with your heart and your eyes to your students, not the ears, but look at them, feel what they're saying, and also to their parents, because the parents are your customers, and that they are dropping their precious cargo there every day. So take time to listen to the parent and to the student. You don't have to always agree with the parent, you know, and we don't always do. But listen to them, listen to their story, and help them do what's right by their children from the parents' story.
Thank you. We have another caller. Good morning. This is Guardian AM.
Good morning. This is Angela Comer.
Good morning, Mrs. Comer, another one of my favorite teachers for 2 years and who definitely imparted in me the love of reading. Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. I'm on the air because Miss Benaby is talking.
You're on the air.
Oh, well, we just want to say thank you to Miss Benaby. She's an inspiration to us all. She's been a family member. She's supported us. She's been absolutely wonderful. So I would just want to say congratulations.
Thank you. And thank you so much for serving by her side for
absolutely.
So many decades.
Yes. My whole
I've enjoyed it.
Angela Culmer, my entire administrative journey as vice principal, you have been right there by my side. And I just want to say, sisters, we are. And thank you so much for just always being there.
And thank you. We love you.
And you are valued and appreciated and most of all loved.
Thank you.
By your former students, too. I think of you so often, especially when I'm trying to read stories to my children with the enthusiasm and voices you read to me.
I love it. And I'm inspired by Mrs. Benaby.
Amen.
Okay.
Amen. Thank you. You've touched a little bit on what the best part of your job was, Mrs. Benaby. You've said the families, the relationships. What is the hardest part of your job? Is it the parents too? No, I'm just joking. What is the hardest part of your job?
You know, you're constantly making decisions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes before I leave the house, it's like I'm playing chess. Mm-hmm. You have to juggle if somebody's absent, if this is going on. So the hardest part is that constantly always having to make decisions. So as an individual, as an educator, and even as an administrator, we need to make sure that we take care of ourselves. And this is a plug out to all my fellow administrators out there, that you have to take care of you first, because you cannot pour from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. And you don't determine, your best laid plans don't necessarily happen when you get to school. Stuff happens long before you arrive at school. And you have to make the decisions to make sure that your school opens and flows without a parent knowing that there may be things behind the scene going on. And so that, for me, is important, that teachers and administrators understand. Personal care for you is most important. Don't sell yourself short. Do whatever you need to do to make sure that when you get on campus, that your students and your teachers can get the best of you, because they're looking to you. And the most difficult part of the job is, unfortunately, all of the administrative.
All the paperwork.
Yes.
You want to press the easy button and make it disappear. No, that's the unromantic part of it. And as you say, we're seeing the photo finishing. As a parent, you drop off, you see the photo finish. You see and you're seeing the 3D images. And we see the tip of the iceberg. You're seeing the other 90% of everything that goes into making a successful day. And what we also see is the headlines. The social ills running rampant in the streets with so much heartbreak so close to home, taking the lives of our young people. It is said that education is the vaccine to violence. What responsibility do schools and the educational system have in this? What help can they be? I mean, I've just had someone say that when it says when we're looking at these young people being gunned down weekly in our streets, they're like, well, education is the only hope. How does that make you feel that... No problem, other than GLAAD scores, you get to also save the nation, Mrs. Benaby.
Yeah. We have to decide and determine what the school mission and purpose is. And we cannot leave the family out. A healthy family will produce healthy students in school, will produce a healthy nation. So we have to go back to those children Most of them, they start preschool. But as far as parents, we have to do our part. We have to do our part. And then we ask you when your children enter school to be partners with us. We know we can't do it without the parents. Mm-hmm. And so without that partnership, and I always say to teachers, we are not in a battleground. Do not approach.
Oh, but you are.
No, we're not.
That's been my whole metaphor. Don't mess it up.
No, it's not a battleground. Yeah. It has to be a partnership. It has to be a community. It has to be that we are all wanting the same thing. And if you ask us individually, we want what's best for the little person or the bigger person, or we want the best for the children. So then if that is what we all want, let us all get together and do whatever it takes to ensure that the children benefit from what we all want. That's not easy.
No. Amen. It's one of those frightening questions that you almost don't want to ask, because someone has to take responsibility for it. One of the things you said a little earlier, and you said, you know that you haven't been perfect. Everyone throughout over four decades of teaching, you're going to learn. But I appreciate that you've always been open to teaching, that the ways, I mean, even back in the day, there was a certain level of corporal punishment acceptable in schools, not even acceptable, but deemed responsible in schools. Now we're looking to a point where we're saying we've got to take care of our mental health, because we have students that are on suicide watch, that are facing depression, that are facing cyberbullying. But you, at every point of your career, have said, okay, when you know better, you do better. We're growing forth, and this is what we're dealing with today. Let's deal with these children now and today. And I always admire you for the growth that I've seen in you. Now, child memories are long and strong. So that's why I think you would treat children with so much respect. I try to treat all the children I meet on the school drive with respect, because I know what I remember. And I know the grudges I hold for when I had to stand up in assembly. And also the teachers that blessed my heart. So here's your magic wand, even though you don't need it. We're in the last few minutes of the show. I know you're a lifelong learner and innovator. You just had STEM week last week and a lot of maternal struggles with us building a robot. But if money were no object and you had the ability to create any course to be taught nationwide, mandatory, what would you like our children to be learning? Now, a lot of your students have answered this on my Facebook this week for you. So if you need me to give you a moment, I can read some of those answers. But if you have an answer, go ahead.
No, read some of this.
All right. So these are a lot of your QC comments and friends from elsewhere. They've said financial literacy, mm-hmm. planning and management, mm-hmm. mental health, how mm-hmm. emotional intelligence and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. I think that touches back even to the vaccine of violence. Mm-hmm. How to create and manage a business, because we're told, go forth, run a business, be an entrepreneur, and nobody knows. I'm getting a business license now, and I'm like, this is like a graduate degree. More art, more things to do with art, creativity, dance, music, things that are connected to our Bahamian culture, real Bahamian history. That's interesting to me, because you mentioned as a student, you said, this is great, but I want to know what really happened. Mm-hmm. What created the fabric that wove the quilt of who I am today? And not just the pirate and the glossy tourist history. And I think they do get into more of that today in our curriculum. Nature and respect for it, because that is the wealth mm-hmm. and health of our country. And knowledge of it. Sometimes I see things happening in our environments, even if it's just littering, that that would be impacted by that. Some self-defense and 101 life skills, like, you know, just how to cook a basic meal, how to do some laundry, the things that you'd say parenting should cover, but this is suggested. Would you have anything you'd add to that list? Or do you think that's something that's school responsible, or is that parenting? What do you think?
A whole child, so we have to be a part of it. And my students know me, because all of the above, the soft skills, I feel our students should have some soft skills. And the one is communication, and communicate clearly, communicate with looking in somebody's mm-hmm. eyes, extend. Don't give me a flimsy handshake. Some basic life skills that they need to have. So no matter what sphere they enter, you enter with a confidence and authority that I am who I am. This is the best version of me, and I can present myself in any situation. And Catherine, the one that you left out, and because of my age now, mm-hmm. the one thing, there's two. Students should be mandatory that all students visit at least 5 different family islands. Mm-hmm. Now, that's another show and another conversation, but I think you know where I'm going with that. From Auckland to Abaco to Grant, I think it should be mandatory that all students visit the different family islands so that they know They're,
I volunteered to be a chaperone on those trips. I want to go too. And we just had, didn't we have a young man who from Exuma just get into Harvard? We got to give him a shout out here. I did get a text saying that talking about violence in our streets and the end of corporal punishment in schools, there in no situation can be where violence exists and it's approved of within our school settings. And the implication that there is some. And again, QC has a counseling center, no tolerance now at all to anything like that given. I know we're getting into the few last minutes of our show. I will say that throughout this week, and I'd love to talk about this another time, I've had in my inquiries countless stories of teachers that have impacted lives shared. A lot of them, of course, within my school, QC, Veronica Roberts, who came up a lot. But so many other teachers have come up, and a shout out to my children's teachers, Mrs. Benoit, Mrs. Bonamy, I love you very much. But I have, you know, Miss Lisa McCartney, you were talked about by students. She's another principal elsewhere. But my uncle talked about his, Uncle Pericles talked about how he still every day cites his teacher that told him about road etiquette and rules, and sometimes it angers him because people didn't all attend that class. But I know so many of us have a teacher we'd love to stand and salute with gratitude. And I encourage you out there to honor yours with the weeks coming up, but just in the way we treat them with respect and honor. And that the teachers, like you, continue to honor our students as the individuals they will grow to be as the heads of our country. This is the teacher I honor today. And it is said that teacher is the teaching is the ultimate act of optimism. And I just thank you, Mrs. Sylvia Benaby, for giving us, for giving me hope. Do you have any final words you'd like to say?
I want to answer the gentleman on the AI quickly.
Oh, you need to do it so he's not upset with us.
Oh, yes. I just want to say that AI is an opportunity and that it is here. So teachers, we haven't any other choice but to embrace it. But it is an opportunity, and as educators, we can use it as a tool as well. So AI is here to stay, and we have to embrace it.
As your former head boy of QC, my grandfather, Alexander Miller, said, adapt or die. Mm-hmm. So we adapt and thrive. Right. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I love and appreciate you beyond measure.
Thank you.
They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
With boss man was saying in the back there just now.
About what? The luncheon?
Why are you always worried about food? No. About how we gotta pay a little more for national insurance.
Mildred, you talking fool.
I can't afford to pay that. And you're always crying palm out. Ain't gonna be much. Boss still gotta pay. 1st of July 2024.
I think that terminal benefit is what did help my boy Tony through the pandemic. That same unemployment benefit. And guess what?
What?
Susan, I think she'd get a pregnancy benefit, eh?
You mean maternity benefit, eh? So now, we gotta do our part to make sure we get our pension. All right.
For more information, visit NIPRateIncrease.com.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.